Good morning, everyone. It's really such an honor to be here speaking at Midrashet. I really feel it's such an inspiration, and I fully intend on sharing with my students tomorrow morning, my young women, this experience, and to share with them that it's really such an inspiration for me, and I hope for them as well, that they should be exposed to the idea that for many, many years after one is beyond formal schooling, a woman can make time to spend on a Sunday morning to learn Torah on a high level, and I think that's really an inspiration to me personally, and I intend to share that with my students as well, so thank you for that. And I just want to give a Parsa Tov note to my dear colleague, Ms. Miriam Bornstein, who I know has spoken here before, and she actually recommended that I come to speak with all of you today, so I hope that you will enjoy, even to some extent, what you might enjoy from her. She's wonderful. So when I started teaching at Central a number of years ago, I got thrown a curveball. They told me that I was going to be teaching Vayikra, Sefer Vayikra. Now, that was really intimidating for me because despite learning for many, many years in many levels of schooling, in seminary, in Stern College for Women, in Azrieli Graduate School, I had never been exposed to the entirety of Sefer Vayikra. And I believe that's because many schools choose to jump over this Sefer because it's about the Mikdash and it's about Karbanos and it's very obscure and it's very, very hard to relate to in our modern times. And therefore, my schooling for many years had made the choice to just completely skip over it. And yet, here I was being asked to teach it to our modern high school girls. And I think this is a challenge that many of us may relate to, seeing as we just began in the Kriyas HaTorah, the Parshios of the Mikdash. This past week we read Parshas Truma. We have four more weeks coming up of Mikdash Parshios in Sefer Shmos. And I heard from Rav Moshe Weinberger, quoted by Rav Tani Cohen, that, you know, this year is especially difficult because it's a leap year, so Vayakal Pekudei is spread out over two. So we're really up for a whammy in terms of how much time we are going to immerse ourselves in the Mikdash ideas. And again, how do we relate to this, seeing as we don't have a Beis HaMikdash currently, or a Mishkan, and we don't have the opportunity to really immerse ourselves in these experiences, and yet this is something that we are told is Lidoros. It's supposed to apply for generations, even in our generation, without a Beis HaMikdash. And I think that's really highlighted, and we can begin to explore this through our sources. So in this past week's Parsha, Source 1, we see the charge, V'asuli Mikdash V'shachanti V'socham. Hashem commands us that we should make a Mikdash for him, a sanctuary, and he will dwell among us. And the Sefer HaChinuch, explaining the parameters of this mitzvah, quotes the Rambam, and he says, Mitzvah binyan beis habechira, the mitzvah of building a house for God, livnos bayis l'shem Hashem, building a house for the name of God, klomar, what is this house? What's the purpose of Hashem's house? Sheniyeh makrivim sham karbonosav, karbonosinu alav, that we should bring there karbonos, purpose one, Visham tia ha'aliyah l'regel v'kibbutz kol yisra'a b'chol shana. And also there will be the going up for the regalim, for the three holidays, and the gathering of all of Israel every year. Shana emar v'asuli mikdash. As the pasuk says, make a mikdash. So the Sefer HaChinuch, again quoting the Rambam, discusses two purposes of the mikdash. Of course, there are many other things that happen, but these are the essence. We have, on the one hand, bringing karbanos, bringing these offerings, and on the other hand, we have aliyah l'ragel. So I think in our modern times, aliyah l'ragel is something that, although we don't have a mikdash, we still have that understanding, as we are sensitive to the regalim, and people do in our modern times have the ability to go to Eretz Yisrael, to go feel the environment in Israel. So that one, I think, is slightly more relatable, even in our modern times. But what do we do with makrivim shan karbanosenu? How do we relate to this concept of karbanos, of offerings? It can feel so removed. But we should know this is not the first time that anyone is asking this question. The rabbis, our chazal, were asking this question even as soon as the first and second mikdash were destroyed. See source 3. The Yalkut Shemoni, which is the gathering of Midrashim, tells us that Rav Chanina quoted discussing a pasuk in Tehillim, ki mimizrach shemesh v'ad mevo'o gadol shmi. So that is mimizrach shemesh ad mevo'o mehulal shem Hashem. That's the pasuk in Tehillim, which means that as the sun is rising until it goes, Hashem's name should be spread throughout the world. And the rabbis are discussing this pasuk, and they say that Hashem means b'chol makom muktar mugash l'shmi. In every place throughout the world, wherever the sun is rising and setting, you should be bringing kitores, you should be bringing incense to Hashem, mugash l'shmi, you should serve to my name, umincha Torah, and you should be bringing menachos, tributes, pure tributes to God. But then the Midrash asks a question, and I really believe this is a question we have even in 2019. V'chi yesh kemitza v'haktara bebavel? Really? Everywhere? Is there really kmitza? Is a process of scooping a handful that's related to the karban mincha? Really, we don't do that. The haktara, we don't bring incense in Bavel, right? So how can we say that we serve Hashem in every location? Don't we only serve Hashem in these ways in a Beis Hamikdash in Eretz Yisrael? Answers the Yalkut Shimoni, Ella Amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Rather, Hashem says, Ho'il va'atem is asking behen. Since you busy yourself in learning about these things, ma'ala ani aleichem ki'ilu atem akriven osam. I am going to raise you up as if you're actually bringing them. So I think this point for us to realize is that even in Bavel, they were struggling with this concept of we don't bring karbanos, how do we relate to this? And the rabbis told us that Hashem views it that as long as we're immersing ourselves in these concepts and we're learning, we're misasik, we're busying ourselves with these important ideas, Hashem is seeing it as if we're bringing them. So that's our first idea for this morning, that we should just realize that even if we can't bring them in our times, learning them in and of itself is seen to be an avodah, is seen to be a service of Hashem. The second point the Medrash makes, which I think is also important, is that Rabbi Asi said, and he asked, Mipnei ma matchilin l'tino kos b'toras kohanim? Why do we start little children learning Toras Kohanim, which is the rabbi's name for Sefer Vayikra? Yatzchilu lahem mibreishis. Shouldn't we start with breishis? Now, I would posit that in our modern school system, unfortunately, we do start, fortunately or not, we do start with breishis. But we see that the rabbis did not have the same curriculum as we do. They said, why do we start little ones learning with breishis? Why do we start with Vayikra when we should start? Why don't we start with Vayikra? Why do we start with Vayikra when we should start with Bereishis, seemingly? Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, Ho'il v'hatinokos tohorim, since little ones are pure, v'hakarbanos tohorim, and offerings to Hashem are pure, yavo tohorim yis'asu b'taharos. The little ones who are pure should come and busy themselves with the pure offerings. Now, we can discuss this for a whole shiur, just what this means, but we're not. The one observation I want to make from this is, again, even though this is not what we do in our modern times, the rabbis believed that the most important sefer, square one, for even the youngest children to be learning was Vayikra, was Karbanos. And that's why it's wild to me that in most schools, we don't even teach that in high school. We never even get to the Karbanos. And I think it's so important for us to realize that although we may find it hard to connect to these ideas in our modern times, our rabbis, even in a time without a mikdash, believed that these topics are so important and are so relevant, even in our modern milieu. And with that introduction, I would like to engage in some study of these karbanos and maybe to find some relevance and meaning for us to connect to these ideas despite our lack of ability to bring them in our current time. So first, I just want to start with some background, because I believe that because it's not so commonly studied, it's important that we discuss some basics about the karbanos before we get into more of the depth and the understanding. So just some basics here, some background. The first prakim of Vayikra, the Sefer, are the Parsha Vayikra. And in Parsha Vayikra outlines many different types of karbanos and goes through one category per perek. So we have in Perek Aleph, and I really just brought a short introduction for each. We have in Perek Aleph Pasuk Gimel, Im ola karbano min habakar, zachar tamim yakrivenu al pasach o amoed, yakriv oso lertono lifnei Hashem. The first karban that the Torah tells us about is the karban ola. The karban ola, explains Rav Hirsch, is le'alot. It's to go up. It means that a person would bring a karban ola, says Rav Hirsch, if they want to ascend in their avodas Hashem. I want to come closer to Hashem. I want to bring myself to a higher level. I would bring an ola. An ola is a karban nidava. It is a voluntary offering. And so Rav Hirsch's explanation is very beautiful, which is, I volunteer to come closer to God, and I have this opportunity through this karban ola. That's the karban ola. The second type is outlines in Parak Beis, Pasuk Aleph, V'nefesh ki sakriv karban mincha la Hashem, sola siya karbano, v'yitzaka la Hashem, v'nasan alaha lebona. If a soul wants to bring a karban, mincha, to God, then they would bring fine flour, and they would pour oil on it, and they would include the lebona spice. This is the second type. The second type of karban, also a nedava, also voluntary, is the karban mincha. Mincha means tribute, it means present, and this is also a voluntary offering. If someone wants to bring a tribute to Hashem, to thank Hashem perhaps, or recognize good that God has done for them, they may choose to bring a karban mincha. This is also with the explanation of Rav Hirsch. A third final type of nedava is the shlamim. We see in Source 6, Parak Gimel, V'im zevach shlamim karbano, im min habakar hu makriv, im zachar im nekeva, tamim yakrivenu lifnei Hashem. The third type is an animal offering. It's called the shlamim. And again, Rashi explains shlamim means shalom, it means peace, it's a peace offering. And that might be brought if there's strife in a community or there are difficulties and they want to increase peace. So people bring it together. It's really a communal karban because everyone who brings it eats a portion, they share together, and it's a way to unify. And finally, the last two types of karbanos, we have source 7, source 8, source 9. These are the chovah karbanos, the required karbanos, and these are the chatas and the asham. We're going to go quickly because time is short and there's a lot to see in the packet. But the chatas and the asham are two types of sin offerings, right? Chatas meaning sin, asham meaning guilt, and they're brought for various, the Torah spends a long time discussing the different sins a person may commit that they would have to bring one of these offerings. And so those are the sin offerings. And again, they're brought if people transgress in some way that may be punishable, maybe not, but that they need to repair their relationship in some way, and it's a need. They need to repair it, and the Torah mandates that they bring karbanos for that. And finally, I just included for your personal information this chart, which I think is very instructive, which is source 10. Rabbi Menachem Nitag, a Tanakh scholar and expert, outlines this parsha for us and really divides the different types of karbanos. If one wants to explore further, this will be the end of our basic introduction. But if you would like to look further, there are many, many types. And I really do encourage you, at least when we get to the parshios of Vayikra, to explore. There's so much depth. I specifically recommend Rav Hirsch has beautiful explanations of every detail, really unveiling magnitudes of depth for each karban, and I think it's a fascinating read. But for now, we'll close the book on that brief introduction. So in terms of how I think we can connect today, I wanted to explore the rationale for the karbanos. Why? What's the why behind this fascinating practice that really consumes so much of Sefer Vayikra and also the parshios that we're exploring now? So before we start, I just want to make a point that, of course, ultimately, anything we do in the Torah is because it's a mitzvah, and mitzvah means commandment, and it's because Hashem said so, which is really the be-all and end-all answer. We brought karbanos because Hashem asked us to, and that is really the short answer. However, we do believe in the concept of ta'am ha-mitzvos, ta'amei ha-mitzvos, the reasons, or really the taste of the mitzvah, and I believe that many of our great sages felt that it is worthy for us to explore these flavors, the ta'amei ha-mitzvos, because it's important for us to feel, to taste the beauty of the Torah that Hashem has commanded us. And again, especially with a mitzvah as obscure and removed from us as karbanos, I think it's so important for us to access that flavor and to feel a little bit of the taste so that we too can experience in our lives some sort of karban mentality, even as we're not bringing them. So I brought here four approaches that I believe we can find among our rabbis and scholars, some more ancient, some more modern, as to how we can view this rationale. And each one, I think, really gives us meaning for our times, despite not bringing the karbanos now. So follow along with me. The first approach is really championed by the Rambam, and I don't think we can start a discussion about karbanos without starting with this very famous Rambam. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim says as follows, starting from the dash, because he's really quoting from a different topic he was talking about, the dash on the first line. He starts by acknowledging that Hashem recognizes a human nature reality. Vihu, it is. It's impossible, it's very difficult for a person to exit one extreme and travel to the other extreme suddenly. Therefore, it's impossible, according to human nature, that a person could leave behind everything he's accustomed to suddenly. When Hashem sent Moshe to make us, B'nai Israel, into a people of Kohanim and a holy nation, be a diato Yisbarach, who would recognize God, v'liniatin la'avodaso, who would be given towards God's service, v'hayaha min haka mifursam ba'olam, the practice, the famous widespread practice in the world at that time, kulo hayu azrigi limbo, that everyone was accustomed to, v'avodaha koleles, the general form of service or worship, asher gadlu ala, that these Jewish people had been raised upon or grown up with, lahakriv minei ba'alei chayim, was to bring, right, to offer all sorts of animals, behechalo ha'im, in temples, asher hayu ma'amidim b'hem hatzlamim, where there were idols set up, lishtachavot lahem, to bow down to them, v'likater lifneihem, to bring incense before them, v'avodim v'haprushim hayu az hanashim, hanetunim l'avodos ha'hechalos ha'im ha'asuyim l'kochavim. And religious people in that time, right, in the time when the Jewish people was formed, religious people were people who brought these types of worship, forms of worship in temples and served them to the stars, to idolatry. So the Rambam starts by saying, what was the milieu of that time? The Jewish people were born into an idolatrous society. When we formed, when Hashem gave us the Torah, what did it mean to be religious at the time? It meant to worship through karbanos, through sacrifice, to bring to bow and to bring ketores. Says the Rambam, Lo zeirach achmato yisbarach, God did not command, v'tachbulotu ha-mevu'ara, in his eloquent strategy, b'chol b'yotav, she'etzivanu la'aniach minei ha'avodos ha'im kulam, v'la'azvam, u'lebetlam. God did not ask us to just leave all these practices immediately, to totally eradicate these practices from our ways. Because this would be something that the heart could not accept. It would be too hard for us to totally reject these practices so suddenly. Because human nature is to always incline back to what you're used to. Right? The Jewish people were so used to these types of services. Hashem would not ask us to leave them so suddenly because he knew that this was too hard according to human nature. Turning the page. He brings a great mashal of the Rambam. He says, this would be, kilu yavo navi bizmanenu. Let's say a navi would come in our time, who's trying to gather people to serve Hashem, and he would say, God doesn't want you to dive into him. Hashem does not want you to pray anymore. V'lo tatumu, don't fast on Yom Kippur. Just, you know, like, leave that behind. We don't really need that anymore. V'lo tivakshu tshuvato beis tzara. And you know, when times are bad, don't call out for salvation. We're switching things up. Hashem doesn't want that. Aval tiyah avodascha machshava. You know what? Just your service of God now, it's just going to be a thought service. You're just going to think, right? Mibilti masa, with no action. Says Rambam, imagine someone started coming. Imagine that was the shiur I gave today. And I said, God doesn't want your prayer. Hashem doesn't want us to fast anymore. He told me. He just wants us to think. We're going to meditate a few times, and that's our expression of religion. Says Rambam, you're all going to go home, and Yom Kippur is going to come around, and you're going to fast because it's too hard. You're used to that. It doesn't feel religious to you. It doesn't feel like Judaism. And therefore, he says, in those times, when they were so used to worshiping and bringing sacrifice, they needed this. This was what religion was to them. Going back, because of that, Hashem kept these different things. He kept these types of practices. He copied them. ulayinyanim zimyonim, from being to imaginary fake gods, she'en amitos lam, yeah, they have no truth, lishmo yisbarach, no, now we're going to do them to God, the Almighty, mitzivanu la'asot tam lo yisbarach, and he commanded us to do the same practices, but direct them towards him. Mitzivanu livnos lo hichal, lo, he commands us build a temple, but for him, for Hashem, vasuli mikdash, v'she'yah ha'mizbeach lishmo, keep a mizbeach, keep an altar, but it should be for my name, because I'm the real zeal. Mizbeach adamata seli, v'she'yah ha'karban lo, and that the sacrifices should be directed towards him, adam kiyak b'mikem karban la'Hashem, a person should bring a karban, but to God, and that we should bow to him and bring incense. The Rambam concludes, again, for time's sake, we'll just skip to the last line there. Kol Zayinyan, the whole matter is, he says that the whole idea of this concept and his philosophy is that Hashem's ideal, Avahatzila Vatzchina, Hi Muteres B'chol Makom, he says Hashem's ideal, his Kavana Rishona, God's ideal, is not these practices. I mean, think about it. According to Rambam, these are idolatrous practices that God permitted. So for the Rambam, let's think of it as a bridge. Rambam says karbanos, right, and ketores, and bowing in the mikdash, this is all a bridge from avodah zarah, serving foreign gods with all of these practices, to avodas Hashem, service of God, with beautiful, pristine tefillah and tchina, supplication. We need a bridge because those are two extremes, and the Jews needed that time to adjust. So according to Rambam, karbanos are an adjustment period, right? They're really idolatrous practices, but God copied them because it would have been too hard for us to jump. Therefore, it concludes the Rambam. What's the ideal service of God? It's tefillah. It's what we do today. And therefore, according to this first approach, really, karbanos are a beautiful thing in the mikdash. They are worship. But actually, what we're doing now might be more ideal for Hashem, in which case the avodah that we're doing in our modern milieu is great. According to Rambam, we are hitting it out of the park. If we connect to tefillah, if we connect to the different practices that we have that do not smell of idolatry, then we are really where we're supposed to be. And that's the first approach. And I think that gives us encouragement that while we may feel, wow, we are really missing out, we really have such a watered-down version of Judaism without the Beis HaMikdash, the Rambam holds that we really are doing well, and that where we're at. Now, it does become a little tricky because the Rambam also, there's a machlokas, does Rambam believe that in the third mikdash that we would bring karbanos, and that's a machlokas, right? Does Rambam believe, given this whole thing, I mean, he says it straight out, that this is what we should be doing, what we're doing now, so where do karbanos fit in? That's one question, that's one critique, is that where you were thinking? Great. The Ramban has many more critiques, and so I wanted to just show those to you briefly. Ramban destroys Rambam, in a sense, and he says in source 12, "Ilad zvarim behim harich." All these things he quotes Rambam, behim vihinehim divrei habai. I think they're foolish, says Ramban. I think that Rambam's approach is foolish, and he goes through, and I just included them briefly. He goes through a number of critiques. He says the first one, "Yaasu shulchan Hashem megu'al." He says Rambam's opinion makes the shulchan, which is a reference to the Mizbeach, God's table, it makes it disgusting. I mean, think about it. Karbanos become this avodah zarah practice, right? This really idolatrous practice that we just do because B'nai Yisrael are weak. He says that makes karbanos something that's really idolatrous, and I don't think that that's right. Because the Kasuv says, "V'hakasuv amar kihim lechem ishe l'reach michoach." They have a beautiful smell. So Ramban says, how do you say that they're so disgusting, Rambam? What Pasuk says that Hashem thinks that they are beautiful. That's his first issue. Also, v'gam ki lefi shitosam shal Mitzrayim lo titrapei machalatam hazeh avot tosi machov. He quotes another piece of Rambam's approach, which is that even according to Rambam's approach, he feels this is not really the best way to eradicate these practices, because if you want to show that idol worship and these different things are worthless, then you should really, right, and you want to show that their animal worship and all the things they did are so bad, then you should either leave them behind, or he says, really, you want to show that you shouldn't serve other gods, so you should show that those gods are worthless. For example, they used to serve animals in Egypt, you should just eat them. Don't bring them to Hashem and show that they're important. animals are important, show that they're below even a human and just eat them. Don't bring them to Hashem. It's a more, that point he develops much larger. That's also another discussion. But he just says that he doesn't even think it's really the best bridge to begin with. And finally, he says, "V'hinei Noach b'tzeiso min ha'teva im shloshes banav in ba'olam kasti o mitzri hikriv karban." Really? This is to repair idolatry? I'm pretty sure, says Ramban, that Karbano started before idolatry started, because Noach brings a Karban. He goes on to say, right, the earliest Karban brought is the Karban discussion between Cain and Hevel. Adam and Chava believed in Hashem. Cain and Hevel are talking to God. Cain and Hevel bring Karbanos. What idolatry are you repairing? That's a service of Hashem. It started off as a service of Hashem. So Ramban does not agree with Rambam's approach for these reasons. And again, finally, he says, "I just really struggle. It's supposed to be something beautiful, and I would like to find a different answer." And although many of the Mefarshim do defend Rambam, the Meshech Chachma has a beautiful defense, which I think really can answer a lot of the questions. We will leave that aside for now, and let's go to Ramban's approach, which is approach number two. Ramban, having called Rambam foolish, decides that he needs, obviously, a different approach, and he says as follows: Yotera oili shmoa, what makes more sense, or what's fitting to me to say, hata'am, the reason, shomrim behem, ki ba'avor shema'ase b'nei adam nigmarim b'machshava u'bezibor u'bemasa. He says, human action is completed with three steps. We have machshava, thought, zibor, speech, ma'asa, action. Tziva Hashem ki ka'asher yechta, God commanded that when a person brings a karban, yismoch yadav alav, he should lean his hands on it, keneged hama'asa. That is connecting, that's corresponding to the action that you did wrong. V'yitzvadze b'pith, he has to say vidoy, he has to confess verbally. That corresponds to a speech, to you saying, I want to do something wrong. And he says, v'yisrof ba'ish ha'ker ba'klayos shem kli mechshava, you burn the innards. He says this reflects the inner thought, the inner process, and therefore you would burn the animal, and that corresponds to the thought. To wrap up, he says, the Ramban says that when a person sins, they involve many steps of their being. They think about it, right? They think, I'm going to do this thing wrong. They may verbalize it, I'm going to say this thing, and then they actually do the action. And he says, a karban is a process, it's an experience where a person sees the sin they did and they go through it so that they're actually atoning for each step of their sin. They put their hands on it, right? They're acting, they're speaking, they have to speak a confession of vidoy, and they also burn the innards, which represent their inner process. And he concludes with that when a person sees this, kidei she'achshov adam ma'aseh so-kol ila, that a person should think when they go through this karban process, ki chata le'elokav, I sinned to God, begufo, benafsho, body and soul, v'ra'oi lo sheish poch damo. It should be me up there on the Mizbeach. I deserve to die. I did so much wrong. V'yisrof gufo, my body should be going up in flames. That should be me. And rather, right, lulei chesed habore, without the kindness of God, shelakach mimenu tmura, but he took a replacement, a substitute of this animal. So says Ramban in conclusion, karbanos are there as an experience for us, to bring us to tshuva, that we should see, we should really put ourselves into this animal and go through all the steps of our sin so that we're really going through and remembering everything we did wrong. And ultimately, when we see that karban go up in flames, then we should say, that should be me, and it will be a wake-up, aha moment that will lead us to tshuva. That's Ramban's approach. And through that, it does make it something beautiful, right? He answers a lot of the questions that Rambam had, which is, why do people bring karbanos? Even from the earliest times, it's an experience. It's a way of connecting to Hashem. And it makes it a beautiful moment where we're really reconnecting and confessing we did so much wrong. Very beautiful approach. However, this too has some critique. Again, I do think that still, even while we will criticize that, I think that there's so much to learn for ourselves in terms of that when we sin or we do something wrong, it's not enough, says Ramban, just to daven in shul or just to stay at home and say, yeah, I messed up. But rather, we should fully go through the entire sin that we did such that we really go through every piece of the process. I said this wrong. How did that start? I thought something that wasn't nice. I did something wrong. We should really go through an experience of reflection and through the process. That's real tshuva. So I think the Ramban teaches us something about tshuva, even in our times, whether we can or cannot bring a karban itself, that these are ideas that we can connect to during our Teshuva process. However, in terms of a Karban rationale, we do have some questions here as well. Rabbi Yaakov Bieler, who is a rabbi in Silver Spring currently, he and a Torah scholar, he points out some difficulties with Ramban's, what he calls, hypothesis. He points out, number one, that Ramban discusses certain organs, which he says are the innards that reflect our inner thought. Not all karbanos have those innards, have those specific organs. So, and not, I would even add to that, not all karbanos involve an animal. So this idea that the animal, which is living and breathing and right, has these inner workings, represents me, is not true for all karbanos. For example, we have the menachos, right? We learned about that. That's Parak Beis category 2. Those are grain-based offerings. What do you do with a grain-based offering given this approach? That should be me because you see this animal. It's not the same. Furthermore, number B, and you can read if you're interested the English for yourselves, moving forward. Letter B, not all sacrifices appear to be intended as responses to transgressions. So now you know why we did our whole Karbanos introduction. We are all knowledgeable now to know that while two of the Karbanos, two sats, right, Prek and Dalid and Hay, Avayikra, the Chatas and the Asham, deal with sin offerings, we have many voluntary offerings, right? That was Prakin Aleph, Beis, Gimel, the Ola, the Mincha, the Shlamim, which are meant to do beautiful things, to come closer to Hashem, to bring a Mincha, a tribute to God. We also have the Shlamim, a peace offering. So if this whole process is about, right, is about rectifying sin and really going through this intense sin tshuva process, how do you really explain the first three sets? Right, the first three types of karbanos. So these are questions on Ramban. Again, it does not mean that Ramban did not have answers to them, nor does it mean that Ramban is not still a meaningful and a beautiful concept, but it does mean that maybe for ourselves we can probe further to look for another approach. So then we arrive at approach three, which I think is represented in this forno. So source 15. Adam ki akrim mikem, ki akrim me'atz mechem, בבידוי דברים והכנעה על דרך מנשמה פרם ספסינו, וכאמרו זבחי אלוקים רוח נשברה, כי אין חוויץ בחסילים המקריבים בלתי הכנעה קודמת. This forno points out that really the most important part of the whole process of bringing a karban is Adam ki yakriv mikem, a person who brings from mikem, from you, from among you. Seems unnecessary. Why do you have to add that word mikem, from among you? Can't you just say, when a person brings a karban? Why do you have to have that word? Explains the Sforno, because this really reveals the essence of what karbanos are about. Ki akriv me'atz mechem, give of yourselves. It's not about what you're bringing, how you're bringing. It's about bringing. You bring a piece of yourself to God. You come for whatever reason, because you sinned, because you love Him, to say thank you, to come closer. You want to bring to Hashem, you bring something of yourself, of your property, of your being, you make this trip and you give, that is coming close to God. So he explains that a karban is about bringing from yourself. He says, hachna'a, it's about making yourself humble, humbling yourself before God, saying, I am giving of myself to you because I recognize that you are above me, and therefore I'm going to give something. He says that this is accomplished, as we see in the Pasuk in Hosea, Nishama Parim Spasinu, that how can we replace our karbanos, our cows, with words? Right? The Pasuk says, and we use that a lot to make ourselves feel like tefillah is okay, is a good replacement, because Hosea says that we should fulfill our cows with words. So he says that this is because really they accomplish similar things. When you bring a cow, you're bringing of yourself, giving to God. So too, you can accomplish that with words. We can give of our words. We can subjugate ourselves before Hashem and make ourselves, right, say, thank you, Hashem. Thank you for doing so much for me. I want to give something to you. And I think that this is very relevant to our modern times, which is the idea that whether we are giving something in a mikdash, which is tangible, or we are giving something in a shul, which is verbal, it's still something that is us saying, God, I'm taking time out of my busy schedule to recognize that you are above me and to thank you, or to ask for, right, for apology or tshuva, all of these things. I am subjugating myself before you, and I recognize that you are above me. So I think that that really speaks to what we do in our modern times as well, as we replace, or we try to replace, our karbanos with tefillah in our modern times. Rabbi Shlomo Rizkin, in his book, Torah Lights, also a contemporary source, brings a similar idea with a little bit of a twist. He tells us that the idea of Adam ki yakriv mikem, bringing from yourself, he actually focuses on the word Adam. He says that what makes us human, what makes us so unique as humans, is that we have the opportunity to give, in that we realize that we are mortal, that we're going to die, and we have the ability to connect to the divine. I'm going to explain that concept a little further. He says that all creatures in the world, right, they just do, they go about their lives, they do, they live, they follow their instincts, and they die at some point. They're mortal, but no other creature contemplates mortality. No other creature takes the time and has the intellect to think about, what is this all about, who is my creator, right? They just do, they operate. Humans have the ability to reflect and to think about what is above them and what is after them. And he says that while there's been a debate since the time of Aristotle and Socrates about what makes a person human, right? I think, therefore I am, he goes through a whole piece of that. He says, what I think makes us specifically human is that we have the ability to connect to a higher power, to the divine, and he says sacrifice is the perfect way to do that. Why? He says that people have this need. Humans, if we think about it, we recognize our mortality and we want to connect to something bigger than ourselves. We're the only creation that has this desire or a possibility to think about connecting to something larger than us. Right? That we know that at the end of our days, that the body is going to fade, and what's left? And so he says what's left is whatever we elevate to God. If I connect something to the divine, right, hu haya, hu hovehu yihiyah, God was, is, will always be. So if I connect something to Hashem, if I give something to God, that's an investment that is eternal, right? It's better than anything in the world. He says, you see this, if you look around the world, everyone acknowledges this at some level, one or another. Some people acknowledge this by donating to schools, to institutions, right? This represents this inherent understanding of humans that I may pass away, but I want to give my money to something that will be there after me. He says people also do that by having children, right? I may pass away, but I hope to continue on in the world through my children and grandchildren. He says, but what's the best way? The best way to ensure that you will have an impact, that your life will be larger than just your number of days on this earth, he says that's through sacrifice. It's through giving to Hashem. Because God is the ultimate investment. God is not going anywhere. He was, is, and will always be. So if we can connect to the divine, if we make our possessions spiritually connected in some way, then we are investing in a future that will not go away. So he says that therefore he believes that sacrifice is about giving to God, which is an eternal gift. It's an eternal investment. And so that when we give these karbanos, right, I'm saying, I have property, it's true, I have money, but I'm not just going to let it sit in my house. I'm going to elevate it by giving it to God, and through that I have a stake, I have a share in the ultimate, in the divine, in the eternal. So this is another idea. I think I paired it with this forno because I believe that it's a similar idea, which is that by giving to Hashem, we elevate ourselves. We show that, right, Hashem is above us, but we also show that we recognize that He is greater than we will ever be, but we can connect to Him. We can give to Him, and therefore we can partner with Him. And I think that's an idea that is also relevant even in our times. We can't bring karbanos, we don't have that option, but we can invest and connect to Hashem in so many other ways in our lives. Whether it's doing chesed, donating money, doing any mitzvah is really saying, I am using my time in a spiritual way, which I recognize is everlasting. One final approach to share with you. So Rabbi Shmuel Golden, also a contemporary scholar, writes in his book, Unlocking the Torah Text. This is on page 6, source 17. He discusses a lot of these other approaches. I think specifically he's discussing Ramban, and he says that in contrast to classical sacrifices consumed entirely on the altar, karbanos were, in large measure, shared meals with God. So he points out this idea, which no one else has really discussed yet, which is the idea that it's not all for Hashem, other than the karban olah. People actually were involved, right? People brought karbanos, and they ate afterwards. Whether it was the kohanim ate a piece, or for karbanos like the shlamim, the bringers brought a piece, think the karban pesach, right, which was shared. So people ate, and this is food. Faced with the naturally developing distance between man and his creator, forced to address the separation from God that results from sin, the Torah proposes a path, astoundingly profound in its simplicity. Invite God to your table. So Rabbi Golden is picking up on a term we see a lot in Chazal, which is that the Mizbeach, the altar, was Shulchan Hashem. It was the table of God on which we were bringing animals. Now, obviously we understand that God does not need food. Hashem does not need to eat our food. But perhaps that's a human concept that we are connecting to Hashem with, right? Hashem doesn't need food, but we humans, we understand the power of gathering around a table and sharing a meal with someone. That's a very profound experience that anyone who's ever had a family meal or has hosted understands, that people connect over food. People connect. If karbanos are a way for us to connect to Hashem, then perhaps by imagining that we are sharing some sort of meal with God, that's a great way for us to connect. Not because Hashem needs it, but because we are karov, we are coming close to God through this. And by sharing a meal with God, we can come closer, we can connect. That's a way for us to feel like, Hashem, I'm sharing this meal with you, and we're going to connect over that. He points out something which I've seen pointed out in numerous places. I think just such a powerful idea. A karban deriving from the root word karov, to draw near. You may have noticed that I try to be very sensitive, especially in the beginning translations of the psukim, not to translate the word karban as sacrifice. I think that this is something that we see a lot in English translations, and I think it's a disservice to the way that we think about these practices. Karban does not mean sacrifice. That's not what the word means. The word karban comes from the shoresh karov, which means close. I don't think that there's a great English word, but I think offering is better, which is that the idea that karov, I offer something to God so I can come close. It doesn't mean sacrifice. The word sacrifice, especially perhaps because of our other religions that we know of, has a negative connotation. You have to sacrifice. It's hard for you. Karov means come close. It's an opportunity to come close to Hashem. And so he picks up on this for his approach to say that the karban is a mechanism through which an individual can begin to repair and reestablish his relationship with a personal God, a God with whom he has a personal connection. Just as in the human realm, a shared meal is a powerful relational tool, so too a meal consumed with God's symbolic participation can begin to address his estrangement from our lives. I think this is a very powerful concept. The idea that whatever the reason is, so this really answers again some of our questions we had earlier, whether it's because we sinned or it's just because we feel like we have room to improve in our relationship to Hashem, with Hashem, a karban gives us the opportunity to come close. It's an experience where we approach Hashem in his home and we offer a meal and we say, for whatever reason, I may have sinned, I may just not be my best, I think there's room to improve, I want to be closer. Please share this meal with me. And we walk out of the mikdash feeling elevated and feeling like we have had that rendezvous with Hashem. And I think, again, this is an idea that we can connect to even in our times. Coming close can happen in so many places. Of course, we can imagine that in the mikdash experience, which was built in every way, the Rambam explains how even the nuances, every aspect of the mikdash was meant when you came to feel like this awe and this admiration of Hashem. So when you left, you just felt so elevated and so transformed by just the mere experience of going. We don't have that opportunity, but we do have the opportunity to come close. We do have the opportunity to say, God, I want to repair in some way a relationship with you. We can do that in shul. We can do that at home. We can do that through our actions. We can come close to God in whatever way works for us. That could be through tefillah. That could be through actions. That could be through chesed. So many things. It could be through learning Torah, where we say, God, we don't have a mikdash, but we come to this place to learn, to connect with you, to think about you, to invite you into our lives, and to share some time with you. that's something that we can do in our modern times as well. And I think that this is really captured in a beautiful mashal that I heard from Rav David Orlovsky, which I just brought this little picture to symbolize, but I'll share with you. I think it's a very powerful idea. He discusses that there was once a little boy, such a sweet little boy, and he loved his mother, and he just wanted to do something special for her. So he goes out into the field, he goes among the wildflowers, and he picks out from their backyard a few dusty, dirty flowers, and he's so proud of them, he tries to wipe them off, and he brings them to his mother, and he says, "Mommy, I love you so much, will you please accept this offering from me?" And the mother, she looks over, you know, she sees the beautiful bouquet from her husband for Shabbos, she's like pushing it aside, and is like, "Sweetie, that's so nice, thank you so much, of course, and not only that, why don't we go out to the store together? Let's pick out a special vase, and this is going to be our special vase. This is so special and thoughtful that you want to bring these flowers to me." And so they put them up in a special place, and he feels all great about himself. And so the next week, Friday comes along, and he says, Mommy, I brought you these beautiful flowers for Shabbos." And she says, "Oh, son, that is so sweet of you. Look at that special vase. You know where they're going to go." And this goes on. But as years pass, the son gets a little more cynical and a little less wholesome, and he starts seeing it as an obligation, something he has to do. And he becomes a teenager, and he, you know, he feels like, well, mom's expecting flowers, you know, so got to bring those for her. And so he shows up with this bouquet, and it's a little nicer, you know, he bought it from the people selling at school, but it's, you know, it's nicer, but he throws it on the table, and he's like, "Mom, your flowers," and he walks off into his room, and that's it. And so the mother comes and, "Son, hey, I think we don't worry about it anymore, you know? Like, I know it was a nice thing while it lasted, but we can leave this behind. Don't worry." He's like, "Well, you have a special vase. You're expecting it." And she says, I'll get rid of the vase, okay? You hold off. I'll get rid of the vase. No more pressure." And he's like, "Good. I really can't deal with this anymore." And he walks away. Years pass. Time goes on. He goes to college. He doesn't even call anymore. He doesn't call on Fridays. He's not really in touch with her every once in a while. And finally, you know, one day he wakes up. He realizes he's a huge pile of laundry. He looks around. He's been eating garbage. And he thinks, you know, I really had it really nice when I was living with my parents. And mom used to do everything for me. And he looks at the calendar. And he realizes it's Mother's Day. Oh, man. Okay. Great opportunity. He's like, "What can I do? You know, it's kind of awkward showing up empty-handed. I haven't been home in a while. I know. I'll buy flowers. Mom loves when I bring flowers. It's always our special thing." So he goes and he buys a really nice bouquet, and he shows up, and the mother opens the door and, "Son, so nice to see you. I really haven't seen you in a very long time. You know, you could have called." So he says, "Mom, it's okay. Look, I brought flowers. These are really nice flowers, you know, not like the little dirty wildflowers I used to bring." And the mother says, "Son, it's really sweet of you. I really appreciate it, but I think calling every once in a while, maybe talking, is like a first step. You know, we can get back to the flowers eventually, but, you know, right now I'm not sure." And he says, but the vase, she says, "You don't remember? I got rid of the vase because you weren't interested. You didn't want to bring these anymore. Why don't we repair our relationship and then we can talk about flowers?" Says Rav Orlovsky, I think this is very powerful. He says, this is karbanos. This idea really symbolizes the karbanos. Do you think God needed our animals? Think it, he ever needed it? We know that God does not need our animals. Hashem does not eat. He doesn't need this. We wanted to connect to Hashem, and he gave us an opportunity to come close. He said, "You know what? You want to give to me? That's beautiful. That's special. Let me build a mikdash for you to come close to me. Let's make this special space together, and we will meet here, and we will celebrate your desire to be close. That's beautiful." But over time, B'nai Yisrael started feeling like this was a tircha, it was a burden. And they said, "God, you want my karban? Fine." And they only came occasionally, and when they did, it was not with love. And Hashem said to us, "You think I need this? I don't need this." And the mikdash is painful. It's a painful reminder of the relationship we had that you're not interested in. And so Hashem destroyed our mikdash because we weren't interested in it. And now, in our times, or throughout history, people wake up and say, "Oh, Hashem, oh, things are bad. Oh, we want a relationship with you. Let's go all back. Yibana HaMikdash." And Hashem says, "We don't even have a relationship. We need to connect first, and then we can think about building a Mikdash." And so, ultimately, as we conclude here together, And we try to connect to Karbanos in our times. I just think that idea is so powerful, which is the idea that whether or not Karbanos are our thing, whether or not the idea of bringing a cow and watching it go up in flames is really what we think is so beautiful, that was a symbol for so long of our desire, l'karov, to be close to Hashem. And in our times, we don't have that symbol because we destroyed it. We destroyed that relationship. Our people destroyed that relationship with God. And so ultimately, I think the ultimate takeaway from Karbanos is the idea of whatever the rationale is, whatever was the reason that people brought, the specific reason that Hashem gave us this command, what it was, what Karbanos were, was an opportunity to come close, to celebrate, to rendezvous with Hashem, and to have that relationship, repair it, invest in it. And so I think that wherever we are in our times, that is an idea that we can really connect with, the idea of coming close in our way, whatever our way may be in our times. And in addition to connecting in our ways, which we discussed how our ways really can achieve that in our tefillah and in our avoda, in our learning, ultimately, that we should feel a little bit of a loss. That it's not just about how do we make the ideas of Karbanos relevant in our times, but the Karbanos themselves, the idea of having a mikdash, and the idea of having Karbanos, a way to bring it to God, to connect to God in a tangible, real, loving way, that is something we're missing. And nothing can replace that except a mikdash itself. And so I hope and I believe that every day when we say Yihi Ratzon at the end of our davening, Mafanacha Hashem Elokeinu Velokei Avosinu, Sheyibana Beis HaMikdash Bemhira Biyaminu, V'Simchakeinu B'Sorasecha, V'Shom Na'avadcha B'Yira Kimei Olam K'shenem Kamonios. We want to serve you in a mikdash like they used to. Not only in the ways that we have now, which are great too, but also in the ways that they had then, because they were tangible and they were real and they were built and established in a way that showed that we had such a true, deep connection with God. And so I hope that we can all, through this learning today, not only that we should be misasik, right? We should be busy. Hashem should see it as if we're bringing them now. But that ultimately, by busying ourselves, by connecting to these ideas, and by feeling them, that that should also help instill that yearning in us, that we too should have the opportunity to once again serve Hashem in these ways. Have a wonderful rest of your morning.